We've all had that moment in our professional careers where we've had to do or get through something tough. Maybe it's a city council presentation, a pitch to secure a client, or running your public engagement event with a difficult topic. In the 40 years I've been a planner, I've had my share of moments. I'm APA President Sue Schwartz. Joining me today is Dr. Mary Beth Jenke, a forensic and clinical psychology consultant and former special agent with the U.S. Secret Service. Dr. Mary Beth is our MPC 25 opening keynote speaker. Hi, Dr. Mary Beth. It's great to connect again.
Hey, Sue. It's so great to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's just start off with a couple of questions. People get a sense of why I asked you to be the MPC keynote speaker.
Okay.
As a special agent with the Secret Service, you've been in some tough job assignments, especially abroad. Did you experience any self-doubt or fear?
Every day, to be honest. I'd say caveat to that is, you know, I had the self-confidence that I received the best training in the world being a Secret Service agent. But every day you kind of wonder, like, is that going to be enough to take on what might come my way? You never know. We have a saying is that we have to be on every single moment and the bad guys only have to be on one. And so you just wonder, like, is my training enough for what might come my way? And the fear factor, especially in overseas assignments where, you know, terrorism was a far bigger threat. I would just say there's a saying also that someone shared with me several years ago that works for me, just do it scared. And you figure it out after. In other words, and I know this is going to come up later, probably in our conversation, but you really, really in any high stress job, including being a planner, including being a former protector, is you need to figure out how to then deal with the aftermath, right? Like you do it scared, you get through it, but it's not like you then just go on. You got to figure out a way to sort of process that stress, right?
So is that how you learn to overcome it? It's not really overcoming it. It's getting through it and then processing afterwards?
Yeah. I think it's preparation before, again, kind of having that confidence in that particular case that I had the training that I had been through, you know, with each mission. With each assignment, you get more and more confident because, of course, you've probably had to overcome another hurdle. Again, I think this is very parallel with a planner because I think every audience is different for you guys, or every task of every day just presents something that can be stressful, that can be a new challenge. But, you know, learning to overcome, I still feel like I'm learning to overcome as a forensic and clinical psychologist because, again, I have great training. But will I be able to understand the person that I'm working with? And will I be able to help them with their struggles or with the consult or with whatever they're bringing to me, right? So in this case, Sue, my secret, so to speak, I guess, would be that for me, self-care is huge. And I say this in every, and I'll say this, you know, that day that I'm your keynote is, self-care isn't just for everybody else, right? You know, I hear people constantly say, oh yeah, I tell my team self-care, whatever. I go, yeah, well, what about you, right? So it's not just for everybody else, not for my clients, for my friends, et cetera. It's a huge facet of my life if I want to get through any struggle, any stress healthily. Like lots of people adapt, right? But they don't adapt well. And so if you want to adapt well, you need to find coping mechanisms. And for me, there are a lot. And I just got to remember that toolbox full of coping mechanisms. And that's anything from meditation to like long runs to, I even say like my glass of wine at the end of the day and de-stressing or debriefing with my husband, that can be a huge stress relief for me. But I'm not like putting down, you know, four shots of tequila and two bottles of wine, right? So you need to find, each person really needs to find what works for them to de-stress and make sure they're doing that.
Wow. So I heard a couple of things in there. The first is preparation. Yeah. You're going into a big event or getting through something. The more you prepare, the more confidence you can be. Probably get through it, as you get through it, process on the other side. but then also practice self-care so that you are downloading, recovering, and getting ready for the next challenge.
Yes. And making sure that you remember those self-care tools, because again, what works during one situation might not work in the next. You might go, God, you know, that run used to help and now it's not helping. Well, I got to try something else. Like, don't give up. Just don't stop just with one. You got a whole toolbox, right? And if you don't have that toolbox, add to it.
Well, let's talk beyond the self-doubt or fear. How do you manage burnout? A 2024 SHRM survey found that 44% of respondents feel burnout from their work, 30% often feel stressed, and 22% feel anxious.
Yeah.
Planners can face a lot of these challenges, whether it's NIMBYs from neighborhood folks or changing political situations. How can planners prioritize their wellness more, be more resilient, and avoid burnout?
Yeah. The way I understand burnout, it's essentially a state of emotional, physical, and mental exhaustion caused by prolonged stress, right? And so, right, what did we just talk about in the last question is how are we mitigating stress through self-care? So we're going to talk about this during my keynote, how to deal with mitigating stress healthily, right? Again, we got the healthily. But one thing I think is really important for me as a psychologist and for a planner is someone shared this with me. And again, I always give credit that these weren't original ideas, but they gave me this saying, and it's observe, not absorb. So observe, like notice, pay attention, but don't absorb. In other words, if I were, as a psychologist, somebody that absorbed all of the pain that my clients brought to the table, I'd end up with vicarious traumatization. And so I am present with my clients. I'm listening to them. I feel what they're saying, but I do my best to not then take that for the rest of the day or the rest of the evening, because it could ruin my life, right? In a way that I could end up traumatized myself. So I would say the same thing for people that are experiencing like those NIMBY experiences where people are just ornery and rude and angry, and you can look at them and you can learn to navigate it such that you aren't going to harm yourself and it doesn't stay with you for the rest of the day, the week, the month, right? So you're listening, you're being present, you might not agree with them. You might be kind of like really annoyed and frustrated inside, but you need to do your best to tell them you'll take things into consideration, that you have a job to do and that you have to do what's best for the city, right? You're going to collect all the data, you're going to analyze it, you're listening to what they're saying. But in the end, like, it almost has to be a little bit clinical, because if you take it and it's so emotional, it's just going to end up like really, I'm picturing like an icky garbage dump full of stuff that like people are just dumping on you because they're pissed off, right? And we don't want that for anybody, especially for your group of city planners.
I'm laughing because I'm sure our listeners, planners are going, yeah, I know that garbage dump. I know that icky. I got you. Yeah. And I will say what this resonates with me early in my career, but even up till recently, I knew I was empathetic, but I had a counselor friend say, you know, you're more than that. You're an empath. Mm-hmm. And she said, you really got to be careful because you're the kind of person that worries about everybody else. You take everything in, you worry about your staff, you're going to worry about the neighborhood, you're going to worry, you know, just making sure they're okay. And I think a lot of planners are more than empathetic or empaths, and you have to get your head to a point where you don't want to lose your empathy, because that's one of our greatest strengths. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to, a strength overplayed is a weakness. You don't want to do it so it then becomes harmful to you.
Correct.
So it's, I think those are important things to talk about is, you know, there's keep your perspective, that observe, which gives a slight space of detachment, mm-hmm. in what we're doing, but not aloof, you know, again, you know, so watching. So I think those are great lessons, great things to help people think about this. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're the profession of collaborators. It's what we do. And we tend to shy away from the spotlight. That can be detrimental when the public and elected officials do not actively seek our contributions. You know, like, oh, oh yeah, the planners, whatever, they just do zoning, or, you know, not to diss on the zoners, but not thinking through. And we have to get more comfortable. So how can planners become more comfortable with being in the spotlight?
Yeah, you know, when you say that, how do you become more comfortable in the spotlight? I'm just going to tell a personal story, and then I'll, you know, I feel like I have a multi-tiered answer to this. So I taught at George Washington University for 4 years, and probably, I don't know, a year after I stopped teaching, one of my former students went to work for Fox News, and she contacted me. And do you remember the Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie case?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So she's like, we want you to be on the show tonight to talk as a clinical psychologist. And I was like, initially I was like, oh, no effing way. Like, no way. And I was like, and then I was like this, well, so what if I screw up? At least I can say I did it, you know? And so that's kind of how I say, like, getting in the spotlight, like, whether, so this is what went through my head. It's a famous Henry Ford saying, it's whether you believe you can or you can't, you're right. So if you tell yourself, oh, I can do that, like I did for Fox News when I shifted my mindset, I was just like, okay, I'm going to do it. Like, I might not be the best, you know, forensic psychologist they've had comment on something, but what if I keep telling myself, Sue, in life that I can't, I can't, I can't? Like, the spotlight is part of the job as a city planner. So it might not be your favorite part of the job, but it is a necessary part of the job. And I think with each time you do it, you learn sort of like, okay, picture like a White House press secretary, how in the beginning they look like a deer in headlights. And after their fifth or sixth press conference, they figured out the BS. They figured out who they're going to ask, you know, to ask the questions. And so mm-hmm. you're just learning the players with each thing. You aren't expected to be perfect the first time around. And I'll tell you, it is very scary the first, second, and third time, you know, doing, say, a podcast or a public whatever. But each time, I think you get more comfortable. And I think that's part of what we're going to talk about, too, you know, in our March, April, in my keynote, and building resilience and how you kind of deal with that, the whole shifting of the mindset of like, what are you telling yourself? Like, what's so hard about this? Yeah, I might flub up, but I flubbed up before, right?
Exactly. Well, we talked about how we met doing TED Talks.
Yeah.
And we talked about how I was scared to death. I give talks all the time, but this one is no PowerPoints, no notes. And if you screw up, it's 18 minutes that's out there for posterity. It is, you know, you never know. I mean, and I hear from people, we did this in 2022, and I hear from people relatively frequently, like, hey, I saw your TED Talk. It was great. Or, wow, and I can't remember the points I made anymore. You know, I mean, some of them, but the details, I'm like, oh. But part of it, for me, it was just, I was very resistant. And then I thought, well, I'm at the point in my career, if I'm not doing something that scares the hell out of me, then I'm just coasting. But the other piece of it and that one's a little different, but on the day-to-day stuff, I'm going to go back to something you said in the first question, preparation. I mean, getting comfortable with the spotlight, when the more prepared you are, especially if you're doing interviews or if you're talking in front of council or whatever, and part of it, I would say that to embrace our training that says it's not really you, it's your position. It's, you know, it's not Sue Schwartz. It's, you know, I'm speaking to you as the president of APA. And I have to, you know, to have that little bit of separation helps, I think, at least for me. But I think that their idea, the one idea of preparation, the more prepared you are, the more, you know, muscle memory you build doing this, I think the you can get more comfortable. Doesn't mean we don't want to showboat, because that never ends well.
You're the expert. So, mm-hmm. you know, I also think too, what popped in my head is, you know, because you saw my TED Talk is, you know, Nike chose Just Do It, right? Like, they mm-hmm. didn't say, oh, just worry about it. They didn't choose just, oh, I don't know, try. They chose Just Do It. So like, get out there, do, like, I think, I would never, ever, if you would have asked me through my, I don't know, early 30s, I would never have thought that I would have been somebody who was in the public, in the eye. Because remember, I was a protector. So the protector is always in the shadows, right? We don't talk unless we're spoken to. So, you know, it's just one of those things where you go, okay, well, this was presented to me and I'm going to do it. Again, I had a lot of rough, hilarious stories of not doing so great, but here I am. And hopefully I've learned and polished myself a little bit.
Well, I would say so. I think you did okay.
Yeah, thanks.
You've experienced and continue to have a remarkable career that continues to evolve. What lessons are there for anyone, regardless of age, on how to keep evolving in your career?
Yeah. I think one of, it's not that it's easy, but one of the things that was my superpower that mesmerizes some people is I really ignore the outside noise. And what do I mean by that? Everybody has a judgment about, I'll just use my life here. Oh, what do you mean you've graduated college and you're going to live in Spain? You should be getting a job. You know, and I was just like, no, I'm going to live in Spain. And, oh, what do you mean you're going to apply to the Secret Service and the DEA? That's a job for a man. F you. No, women do this job as well. And that riled me up even more. So just that sort of like getting rid of the noise and trusting your own self to go, you know what? I don't want to live a beige life. I want to live a life that I'm proud of. And so just getting rid of the noise and trusting your own heart, because it's not saying don't ask, you know, advice from other people. I'm not saying that, but I think ultimately a lot of times we think what we think we should do. And I put that in air quotes, the shoulds in life. And then life can be so in a box and boring and beige and vanilla. So what do you have to lose? I mean, I'm not saying go quit your job tomorrow if you have like a mortgage and four kids and whatever, unless, you know, it's your whole dream and you have enough money to sort of pay that for a while, right? I'm not saying being reckless, but I say, you know, if you want to evolve and you're bored, like you have one life.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I find it amusing. Last night, I was speaking to a men's group at a church. They want to know about a planning topic. And it was fun because I grew up with three older brothers. So talking to a room full of men was just, they, you know, it was very, I had them. I think I called them a rogues gallery. And then from that point on, they were mine. But this one gentleman, as you were speaking, I remember him introducing himself. And I said, are you retired? He said, well, I was an attorney for 48 years and for 47 and a half, I loved it. Every day was a challenge. Every day brought something new. He said, and then at 47 and a half years, I just didn't like it. And I said, oh, well, what did you do? He said, I figured out how to retire and took golf lessons to pick up my game so I could move. But he had that self-awareness enough to go, aha. And I thought that was incredibly insightful, very incredibly self-aware. I mean, you have to give yourself permission. If you're having that challenge, I'm still a planner at my age for 40 years because I love what I do. Sometimes I don't like it so much because there might be some opinions, but I love the mix. I love the variety. I love that we can, the challenges. But if it ever came to that point, you know, I have those ideas of what could come next. Or start working on other things in addition to. This isn't the only thing that's about who I am. So I think that's great advice of just, you know, what are you? And I will be honest, I was a very scared kid. I didn't like taking risks at all. I didn't want to get in trouble. I didn't want to get hurt. And I wish I could tell you what the switch that got flipped, but something did at some point. And taking, you know, it's like, oh, why would you play it safe? Again, you don't want to be reckless, but you don't want to, you know, why just get through the day? If your life is such that you're just getting through the day, that's a signal that you might want to rethink some things that you're doing or adding some things to you.
You know, it could be something as simple as doing a TED. I mean, that's not simple because we've both done it, but I'm saying something as simple as doing a TED talk. That's evolving yourself as a human. Maybe you aren't totally changing jobs, but, you know, do something that like you always said you wanted to do, or you like take a class, you know, that you said, oh, I always wanted to learn how to, I don't know, cook pasta or, I don't know, cook chili or whatever the heck. It doesn't matter. Do something to like spice up your life. It doesn't have to be major, right? But like I do literally, this is how I work on my resilience. I do something different every month. And it's funny. One of those things I said about a year and a half ago that I put on my list is this year I'm going to do an audiobook, which sounds funny because now I'm on like my 20th audiobook. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I waited this long.
Yeah, it's, I hopefully folks have pulled some lessons from that, but you know, it's about taking risks, not being afraid to fail because you will fail. Something will go wrong. But you get up and you try something else and that's okay.
Man, lucky us that we can do that.
Exactly. So what is something that today's Dr. Mary Beth would tell her younger self?
Yeah. So just to throw in there, because I think this comes to mind for me a lot, is I'm one of seven kids. And I'm six girls, one boy, and I'm the fifth child, number five, of five in a row. So we were 1 year apart, the first five of us. And so there was, yeah, it was insane, to be honest with you. And I say that because, I don't know, I think I just felt when I was younger, I didn't really know how to trust myself because I just kind of watched my older brothers and sisters a lot. You know, I thought, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do. And then after a while, I was like, when I got to high school, I was like, no, I'm not going to play tennis. I'm taller. I'm going to play volleyball. And no, I'm not going to take German. You know, no offense to anybody who took German. But I was like, I want to take Spanish because I'm going to be able to use that. And I mean, this is like four people that I'm following, right? And so I would just say, I guess, in that case, just to trust myself more, even though, you know, I was so little and I'm not little, but then moving into high school, I started to make sort of decisions pertinent to me, not that what I thought my parents wanted or what my siblings did. So just being more confident, you know, of what I kind of knew. And once I did put that stuff out there, I might got a little pushback, but my life turned out like Spanish. Come on. I mean, Spanish was like a miracle for me. I studied in Spain. I worked jobs in Bogota, Colombia, Lima, Peru. I would never have had those if I wasn't decently bilingual, right? So German would have done me no good in the field of protection.
Well, a very limited area. Your assignment would be one corner of Europe.
But... Yep. Yeah. So yeah. And it wouldn't be, well, in my experience during that time, it wouldn't have been very dangerous. Like the countries I went to were pretty dangerous. The Spanish speaking ones, right? Central South America.
Well, as always, you and I could talk for the rest of the afternoon. But I hope for folks who hear this, it gives you a little taste of what we're going to be doing in Denver, because it's not just the keynote. We have a follow-up session, and I think your books are going to be available.
Yes,
they are. Books going to be available. Mm-hmm. So I do have one last question. What was your lesson you learned from doing the TED Talk, other than you met fabulous people like me?
Of course, right? again, I think it goes along that thing of like, okay, so I'll be in July, I'll be 60. And it's like one of those things where, so I did it 2.5 years ago. So I was probably 57, 58. Like, it's just one of those things, like every year I kind of have like this big goal, right? And, you know, one time it might've taken me 3 years to write the book, okay, for example, but like the TED Talk was a huge thing. And like, I say, you don't have to do something that huge. So go take a cooking, go do something, right? That's what I mean is like, I thought that was a ton of work, Sue. I don't know about you, but I'm glad I did it. I'm not doing it again, right? No, I know you're shaking your head right there because you kind of like want to vomit. But you know, just again, we didn't fail, but it's like not one of those things that you go, that was so great, let's do that again. It's like, okay, I did it. What's next? Like but then what's my next thing to keep evolving as a person and not being bored with my life and again living a life I'm proud of.
Mary Beth, thank you for sharing some insights on how we can advance our wellness and be more resilient. And thanks to you for listening to another episode of the APA podcast. You can hear more from Dr. Mary Beth at MPC 25 in Denver and online. To hear previous episodes of the APA podcast, visit us at planning.org/podcast. You can also subscribe to the APA Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.